success looks so easy from the outside, but all successful people have had to overcome enormous obstacles along the way, and in many cases, look failure right in the eye. Most successful people don't focus on the struggle, and they rarely talk about it because that's not what creates success. Join us here, where we'll chat with serial entrepreneurs, both men and women, and share the good, the bad, and the ugly of entrepreneurship. We'll talk about the obstacles we faced and how to overcome them to reach the success that you desire. I am your host, Cami Lehman, and this is She's Invincible. Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining us today on She's Invincible. And do we have an invincible one to introduce you to today? Our guest today has known since she was about 5 years old that she's invincible. She has a touching yet funny story that she's going to share with us today about how she became invincible and how she carries on being so nearly 50 years after first discovering this superpower. Let me introduce you to Chantel Cornelius. Welcome. Welcome, Chantel. We're so excited to have you here with us today.
Hey, Cami. Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes. Yes. I can't wait. Let's jump in. Okay. Let's tell our listeners, how in the world did you get where you are today? And what makes you invincible?
Okay, how did I get where I am? Well, right now I am sitting in my office in beautiful West Berkshire in England. I got here by a very odd route. I was born in Hong Kong, and my mum and dad actually went through a trial separation when I was only three. And my dad was an alcoholic. And to save or to keep me and my sister safe, my mum brought us back to the UK. And she was an amazing lady. She was incredibly tough and determined, very resilient, very resourceful. And when I was five, so she'd been with us on our own for a few years, trying to make a life for herself. And when I was five, my mum got a job with a man who had three children. He got divorced, and he basically needed somebody as a live-in housekeeper. He needed somebody to live in his house, look after his kids. And the deal was, well, if you've got kids, you can bring them with you. So age five, all of a sudden, I went from living with my mum and my sister in a very nice, quiet, idyllic life somewhere, being thrown into a family of seven. And I was the youngest of five. And we go up in 2 year increments. And I was the baby of the family. And it was very strange. I know it happens a lot more now in blended families, but this was back in the 1970s. And I think it was quite a new thing. There was an agency that matched up divorced men and divorced women, and not dating, but it was work. So my mum had a job and she had a roof over our heads. And it ended up being an awful lot of fun, because when I was about seven, my mum and this man who I'd always called him dad because it was easier, mum and dad actually got together and romantically, and many years later they finally got married. But we were together as a family. I've lost both my parents, but my siblings and I, we're still a family, and we have been for, oh, it's very nearly 50 years. I think we ought to have a big party to celebrate. So yeah, that was an interesting start to life, but a good one.
Yeah, that's so cool. So tell us a little bit about your education, some of the jobs that you've had in the past that led you to where you are today.
Oh, another very odd route. I went to university, and well, before that, I went to boarding school for 2 years when I was 16, because the school I was at, I couldn't stay there. They didn't do any more exams. I went to an all-girls boarding school, which is terribly British and very strange, and I did not fit in at all. So I learned how to break the rules. I learned how to survive and how to get by without really making very many friends at all. When I left there, I went traveling for a year with my real sister, Caroline, and we spent 9 years backpacking around the world, which was fabulous. And I think it was back then I developed a love of travel. I'd been on holidays before, but nowhere as exotic as India and Thailand and Nepal. and New Zealand, and it really sparked a love of travel. And I've been traveling ever since, and there's a lot more coming up this year. So I did that, and I then went off to university, and I studied a course called animal science. It was basically animal agriculture. And about 2 years in, I suddenly thought, I don't want to do this. And I couldn't actually see where, I had no idea what I was going to do when I left university. Really wasn't sure. But I had a growing passion for horses, and I actually spent more time riding horses in my final third year at university than I did studying. So I came out of uni and thought, I know, I'll go and work with horses for a while. And I planned to do it for about a year. And 1 year turned into three. And after 3 years of being kicked and bitten and trodden on and falling off other people's horses, the pay is rubbish. The hours are really long. And eventually I thought, right, enough is enough. I need to stop this. This was back in the mid-90s, and I'd come out of university barely having touched a computer. Yes, I know, this is how it was in the olden days. So I went to do a training course in Oxford, near where I lived, and I learned how to touch type. I learned how to use Word and Excel and various other things that you know, most four-year-olds are probably using now. And while I was there, while I was being a student at this, on this course, I helped out a bit. I wrote some posters and some press releases for open days. And the chap who owned the training college also owned a private business college. And he said to me one day, I'd like to give you a job in marketing. And I was like, what? I don't know anything about marketing. And he said, I've been watching you, and you've been helping the other students. You've been writing press releases and doing these posters. I could teach you about marketing. And that was the start of what's now nearly a 30-year career. And, you know, not planned at all, but I discovered that I really loved doing it. I got quite good at it. And eventually I worked for him for a few years and some other companies, and set up my own business, Apple Tree, in 2000. And I've been doing it ever since, and I love it.
Wow. When you think 2000, you surely don't think that was 24 years ago, right? It sounds like 2020, like it was just four years ago, right? When you say that. Yeah, these are like monumental times, right? So, I love it. So tell us, what makes you invincible?
What makes me invincible? I think it goes back to five-year-old me. So I'd gone from living with my mum and my sister, and it was all very lovely and peaceful, and I'd started going to school and everything was fine, and I was blissfully unaware of what was going on with my parents getting divorced and mum having no money. And then I got thrown into this big family. And the others were all older than me, quite a bit older and much more confident. And they were a bit, well, why are you living in our house? What's going on? And I learned to be tough. My real sister, Caroline, when I hit 5 years old, I overtook her in height. She is still tiny. I adore her, and she's tiny. And because I was the youngest, but I wasn't the smallest, which meant that I couldn't put the blame on her. You know, if I started a fight or something wasn't right, I go, she started it. And I got the blame because I was taller than her, which I thought was very unfair. So I looked for ways to get attention from my mum, because before moving in with dad and his kids, I'd had all the attention I needed from my mum. So I'm suddenly in a big family, in a big house, in a big garden, and I started doing things which my eldest stepsister Lucy still teases me about all these years on. If I fell over, whether I hurt myself or not, I would look around to see if mum was watching. And if mama was watching, I'd start crying and I'd get attention from her. I know, it's insane. If she wasn't there, I'd pick myself up and carry on. So, you know, it got to the point where I was probably literally throwing myself on the floor because I needed attention from my mum. And I love the fact that Lucy still teases me about it. So that was the start of me looking for ways to stand out, looking for ways to get attention. And it's only recently, and definitely talking to you, Cammy, that's made me realize that was the start of you know, I'm in marketing. I specialize in strategies that help businesses to stand out. Where did that come from? Scared five-year-old. Who knew? I don't throw myself on the ground anymore much. I have the occasional tantrum, but my mum, bless her, is no longer around, so she can't give me the attention I need. So yeah, I do other things. But I think that's where it all came from. That was the start of my invincibility, my invincibleness.
I love it. I love it. And here now you're teaching people how to stand out without throwing themselves on the ground. So
absolutely, yes. Putting yourself on the ground is optional.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much. Well, speaking of standing out, you have paved the way to walk us right into what we're talking about today, which is those standout strategies, what people can do. What are the steps and the important things we need to know about standing out?
Standing out. Back in 2015, I started researching different ways for businesses to stand out. USPs, unique selling propositions. When you run a service business, so if you're a coach, a consultant, a speaker, a trainer, traditional USPs just don't work. And I got interested in, I started looking for other ways that businesses could stand out. And through the research, I identified five, what I now call standout strategies. They are all about how clients feel when they work with us. So this is not about how I feel as the consultant. It's about how my clients feel and how they want to feel. And when we get the match between what I want to deliver and what they want to feel, it just sings. There's often a mismatch. If back in the earlier days of my business, I had a young team here and we were trying to persuade clients to grow fast, but they didn't want that. They actually wanted a completely different way of feeling. And when I changed the marketing that we do and focused on the correct strategy, the work just arrived, and it still does. So it's a much simpler way of marketing by understanding what the customer wants to feel and then creating that emotional connection with them.
I love that. I love that so much. I can't wait till you and I do that, because we're going to do that too. Yeah. So, okay. So let's talk about those five standout strategies. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's break that down.
Break them down. Okay. Number one is called certainty. This is where clients want to work with you because they want to feel safe. A safe pair of hands is a phrase that gets used a lot. Clients want security. They want to be told what to do. They don't want to be left guessing. They want to know that you've got their back, that you will look after them no matter what, and that you'll walk them through stages, that you'll simplify work. The strategy that makes my business stand out is certainty. So when clients come to me and say, what marketing should I do? I just tell them. I don't say, well, what do you think you should do? We look at, obviously, we look at what the business they're in and what their clients are doing. But I then tell them what to do. There's no messing around. And they love that strategy. So that's certainty. The second one is connection. And this is where clients will work with you because they want you to connect them to other people. It works brilliantly for networking organizations. I do a lot of work in the UK with a professional speaking association. And I was their marketing director on their board for 4 years. And I realized early on that the strategy that we should be using was connection. People join the speaking association because they want to be connected to other members. We have an amazing tribe, family, community, whatever you want to call it. So that's what we use to promote the association.
I love it.
Number three is contribution. This is about helping clients to pay it forward, to be more philanthropic, to be more involved in or more aware of the impact that they have on what's beyond them, so beyond their business. I mean, for some businesses, it's about saving the planet. Charities do really well using this strategy. So if you're a charity and you want to raise money, you don't just say to your sponsors, oh, please, can we have some money? You say, if you give us some money, you will be helping XYZ. And you pull on the heartstrings, but you talk about the bigger impact. So that works really well for charities and not-for-profit organizations. I know coaches and other businesses for whom contribution is a really strong strategy as well.
Sure.
Number four is growth. And this is where your clients want to work with you because they want to either grow personally or professionally or both. I have a fabulous coach, Ian, who I've been working with for about 5 years and 6 years. And when I started working with Ian, I said, I want to grow my business. And he said, great, okay, we'll do that. And then life got in the way and there were parents dying and there was a divorce. And Ian's been there all the way through. And we actually spend more time focusing on me personally and my growth, because when I'm okay, then the business is okay. So for coaches and consultants especially, I see this a lot, that it's the personal growth that needs attention first, and then the business growth. But sometimes it might be purely about business growth. So that's sure. Growth. And the fifth and final one is significance. And this is when clients will work with you because they are looking for a way of having a bigger impact. They want to be seen and heard. They want to be recognized. I have a lovely client, Sue, whose business is all about training women to become more assertive and go for the job they want, go for the promotion. Her strategy is significance. There are women who say, I need to be able to speak out. You know, they might be in a board meeting and they're being overlooked, or they're being overlooked for promotion. So significance is about being seen and heard. Every business that I've worked with will have one of the five strategies. So it's not about having all of them, because this is about standing out and being unique. So every business will have one main strategy. Some businesses will have a second one. So for instance, growth and significance often go together. You could have mostly certainty with a little bit of growth, but there's one that is the main one that businesses should focus on once they know what it is.
Yes, I was going to ask you that. I'm like, oh my gosh, you got to tell me which one is the common theme, what you see the most across the board.
Oh, what do I see the most? Nobody's ever asked me that. It's probably actually a mixture of certainty, growth, and significance. Those three come up more often. I don't see an awful lot of contribution. I know one coach for whom contribution is her strategy, and I've said to her, this makes you totally unique. You're the only coach I know for whom contribution is your strategy. And then connection is quite targeted for companies like networking organizations. So yeah, I see a lot of certainty and a lot of people saying, oh, but certainty is really dull. Yes, it is. And it's really easy to promote a business on certainty. So yeah, a big mix of certainty and growth and significance.
Ah, so good. Yes. So good. So let's recap 1 through 5 again. So number one,
certainty.
Number two,
connection.
And number three,
contribution.
And number four,
growth.
And number five,
significance.
I think that for my business, I help entrepreneurs launch top podcasts. I think for me, it's significance. Like, the certainty is already there. You know, everybody needs growth, right? All businesses want growth. I love what you're saying here about, you know, a lot of times it's the personal growth. And I think that's so important because many of us are our brand. Yep. So if we're not taking care of the personal side, we're blowing it on the business side, mm-hmm. right? Like we're going to fall short because we have to keep up with that, you know, and it sometimes, as you say, like, that there's can be that very excelled, right, growth, mm-hmm. Which some people want and a lot of people don't, right? Because they don't want the pressures and the feeling and all the stress of that. I get that so much. Mm-hmm. But I love this. I love all of it. And it's fun to hear you talk about it and for me to like check the mark, like, mm-hmm. okay, we're doing really good on contribution, right? Or we're, you know, and of course, we're connecting like crazy because we're podcasters. So like, I'm just loving this. And yet you're saying like, you know, you don't have to have all of them, but there needs to be the dominant ones. And then you said, was it significance? And what was the other one that was the two that go together that are really growth. Big? Growth and significance.
Yeah. I see quite a few clients and consultants who have actually equal measures of growth and significance. And I think often it's about their clients want to grow in order to become more significant. or they want the significance in order to grow. So the two.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
That's so true. Oh my gosh. So let's flip the coin here. Let's talk about, okay, maybe someone's listening and they're like, well, I'm just not sure. Mm-hmm. So what are the signs that you would see that you know that you don't have these? So let's talk about certainty. What kind of things would be showing up in your business if you didn't have the certainty mastered?
If certainty isn't your strategy, it's not so much about having it mastered. It's about what the clients are looking for. So for instance, if clients said to me, oh, we want to be on every social media platform that there is, and we don't really care what happens, or we want to know what you're doing, just do it. That would say to me that they are not looking for certainty. It's all in the language that they use. If somebody was saying, I want to really grow my business, that says to me, okay, you're looking for growth, you're not looking for certainty, and I'm not the right person to be working with you. If somebody said, the biggest challenge I have is that nobody listens to me, then I'd be thinking, you need somebody who can help you with significance, and I'm all about certainty. So it's really about figuring out what they want and then seeing whether or not you match it. And it's about, you know, for me, for my business, certainty is the strategy every time that I go with. So if a client comes to me and says, oh, but I also want growth, I would probably say, I'm not the person for you to work with. I can recommend you to a marketing company who will really help you grow and spend lots of your money. Whereas clients who come to me and say, I just need a safe pair of hands, can you just walk me through it? Can you simplify it for me? I'm like, yep. Come on in, let's play.
I love this. And who are the people that you most work with? What are they? Entrepreneurs, small business owners? Who are you working with?
I have two parts to my business. I work with a lot of coaches, and so entrepreneurs, coaches, a lot of professional speakers, and they are absolutely brilliant at what they do, and they are rubbish at marketing. So, you know, they can go and stand on stage and go, look at me, I'm great. Or they give wonderful speeches. But you ask them to market themselves and they're like, no, I couldn't possibly blow my own trumpet. So I work with them. I help them figure out which strategy is the right one for them. And then we put together a marketing plan and I give them the tools and the techniques for them to go off and do the marketing that they need. So that's one side. On the other side, I speak to audiences and to CEO groups about using these strategies in their businesses. So I work with management teams, I work with marketing teams, I work with customer service teams. Sometimes I'll work with, I did this recently, 10 people within one company. So the company is 10 people, and I work with all 10 of them to help them understand which strategy their clients are interested in, so that the whole company, marketing, sales, customer service, even the person on reception, is doing the right thing and delivering. So yeah, there's the mentoring side and then there's the speaking and training side.
So that's a game changer when you can get into an entire company, because each employee has a different thing going on, yep. Right? So yep. Each one is going to have a different need. So for you to be able to get into each one and be that specific is amazing. That sounds like rainbows and unicorns.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yes.
And it can be game changing for businesses, because what I often see too often is that the marketing and sales teams or the marketing and sales people are promoting something, and then the customer service, the delivery, are delivering something different. And there's a mismatch. So the customers are buying in. You know, customers might say, I want to buy into you because of certainty. I want you to just get the job done. And the delivery people are going, oh, yeah, we're going to help this client grow. And somewhere in the middle, the clients go, hang on, that's not what I signed up for. And all of a sudden, you feel as the customer that you're not being looked after, that you're not being heard, because they're trying to sell you something that you don't actually want. So it's really important, particularly with smaller businesses, with smaller teams, to make sure that everybody is aligned. And like I said, even the person who answers the phone, because if clients are expecting certainty, they want the phone answered. They want somebody smiling and polite and cheerful and friendly to go, hello, XYZ company, how can I help you today?
Oh, hello. You're speaking to me.
Yep.
That happened to me this morning. Oh my gosh. I called my website company and there was no way to call them. I say I called them. It took me like 45 minutes to actually find a phone number. And I had to ask the Google gods.
Yep.
They only want to deal with you online. And they're like, yeah, you can cancel. Well, do I get a refund if I cancel, or do I cancel and you get my money? Like, I want to talk to somebody and know the answer. And 45 minutes later, I finally got someone on the phone, and it was like the most frustrating thing.
Yeah.
So put me in the category of I want somebody to talk to.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Just give me the phone number.
Yes. Yeah. I literally Googled, give me the phone number to blank, blank, blank. All right. So let's go to this. You mentioned that across the board, the most popular ones right now are growth and significance. Has that been the idea all along, or like what actually changes that? Is it where the world is, where finance is, where technology is? Where have you seen this shift and change, and what caused it?
Okay. I actually think it's too early to be able to see a change, because I only identified these strategies within the last 8 or 9 years. And so I'm doing a whole load more research, and I'm testing out different companies. I have a test on my website where people can go and figure out which is their strategy, and I'm collecting all the data. So at the moment, the change that I'm seeing is when companies go, so it's about our customers, it's not about us. Or when a professional speaker says, what you mean it's not about me, it's about the audience. You're not the most important one, the audience is. So that's the big shift. And that's great fun to watch, because take professional speakers, when they go from, oh, it's all about me, I'm the hero of my own story, to it's about the audience, all of a sudden their marketing changes and becomes easy, and their delivery completely changes, because they're no longer going, ego, ego, look at me, I'm amazing. It's like, okay, audience, what do you need? What do you want me to deliver? So that's where I'm seeing the biggest shift at the moment, as people are understanding it's not about me, it's about them.
So that's so good. And I love that. And I guess my next question following up on that is, how did the pandemic change? Like, when I look at the list of these five strategies, when we were going through the pandemic, it seems to me that connection needed was something that companies really needed to use as a strategy, because they lost so much connection. So I'm wondering, did you see that? Or is it still, again, too soon?
What I actually saw was more people wanting certainty. I've written a story in my book about how actually the two worst years, the two early years of the pandemic were my most successful, because my strategy is all about certainty. And my clients and potential clients were saying, we need certainty. We don't know what on earth is going on in the world. We need somebody and something that is going to be steady. And I had people phoning me up saying, there's a pandemic on. Is it okay to still do marketing and still try to find clients? And I was going, yes, it is. Let's have a look at how to do it. So for me, two incredibly successful years, and a lot more people saying, with all this mess that's going on, just give me some certainty. So, and I still see that a lot with the more social media platforms that come out, the more changes that there are, the more a lot of businesses are going, I don't want to know. Just give me the certainty of, you know, when I say to clients, just focus on LinkedIn, they sigh, their shoulders drop. It's like, oh, really? Oh, that's fabulous. Oh, because I take away the overwhelm. So that's another big shift. And I think that's going to carry on, because, every now and then somebody comes up with another social media platform or another marketing tool that we must use. And there are still people who go, really? Can we just keep it simple?
Oh, man, isn't that the truth? Okay. And one more question about this. Since you are our marketing expert, let's talk about podcasting as a marketing strategy. I have a podcast school. I teach entrepreneurs how to launch top podcasts and how to use them to grow their business and to monetize. So, and you're a marketing expert, and I know for sure that you've done many interviews this week. So, so I see this is your strategy. So let's dip into that a little bit.
Yeah.
How are you seeing it? Are you recommending it? You know, what are you, how are you utilizing this? And what do you see from your expert side?
Okay. The way, what I recommend to my clients is not to set up their own podcast. Sorry, Cammy, but to be guests on other people's. I hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to set up a podcast, and they might do three episodes and then they run out of energy, or they don't have the technology in the first place. To do a podcast well, you need to know what you're doing. You need to be a great interviewer. You need to listen to what people are saying. And you're doing a great job of that today, because too often people ask me a question. They don't really listen to the answer because they've got the list of questions that they want to get through. I've been a guest on podcasts where we've got to the end of the conversation and the host has said, oh, I didn't get to any of the questions I had prepared, but we had an amazing conversation. So a lot of people just aren't good enough at doing that. So I always suggest to start with be a guest on podcasts, but be really selective about who you will guest with. There are podcasts that I've turned down because they said, oh, we really want to interview you and our market, our audience will be really interested. And I've gone, yeah, but I don't have a story that fits with what you want to talk about, or your audience isn't the sort of audience that I want to be speaking to. So be selective. And it's like with any marketing, it's not about just me coming on a show and going, hey, look at me, aren't I wonderful? I'm invincible, even though I am. But it's about sharing advice. And I love the fact that we've talked quite a lot this time about the standout strategies. And hopefully people who are listening are getting some ideas on how to use the strategies, how to weave the language into their marketing. So good podcasts, whether you're hosting or guesting, it's about serving. It's about giving advice and tips and being useful as well as being interesting to listen to. So it's definitely around being useful and generous. And that's what I would say to people is that's a good way to use a podcast. Use podcasts in your marketing.
I love it. And I'm shaking my head like a bobblehead here, and people may not see this, right? If they're listening on the podcast app, but I actually teach all of that. I just contributed a chapter in a heart-centered marketing book, mm-hmm. and it was about podcasting. And I talk more about guesting than I do about a show. Mm-hmm. And when people come to me and say, I think I want to have a podcast, mm-hmm. I say, how many episodes have you guested on? Mm-hmm. And I'll send them out and teach them how, you know, how to be a great guest and how to use that to grow their business. And then they come back to me when they love it. And then we do their own. So everything you just said, I'm bobbleheading like, yes.
Yay, I got it right. I got it right.
Say it louder, because there's so much power in that. Anything else that we need to know about these five strategies or putting them into action? Anything else?
I think the first thing for people to do is figure out which is the right one. And I think you're going to include my website address in the show notes, aren't you? So there's a page on my website called Take the Test. Go there, take the test. I will run the numbers through some software that I use, and then I will send you a report to show you which is the one for you to use. The report also has a whole load of tips and advice in there about how to use it, how to use the language in your marketing and your sales. So
I love it. Take the test. Yes. So we're going to talk about your books. So let's do that now. And then we'll go back through and make sure they have your website and everything. Mm-hmm. So tell us about, now I know you are currently working on your third book, which is so exciting. Oh my gosh. but let's talk about the other books as well. I mean, you've been in marketing for all these years. So share a little bit about the other two books and what people could find and what they could be reading now while they're waiting.
Okay. My first book is called 1 in 10, and it's very old now because I wrote it after I'd been in business for 10 years. And it was my tips on how to survive the first 10 years in business. And so it's aimed at very, very small businesses who are just starting up. And it's all the mistakes that I made in the first 10 years. Lots of stories, lots of what to avoid. The second one, which is just behind me on the desk, is called magnetic marketing. And this is a 9-stage marketing planning process that I developed from having learned lots about marketing over the years. It's very practical. It's a workbook. You can open it out. You can scribble all over it. It doesn't come as an ebook because, as you know, I've sent it to people as a PDF, but it's not on Kindle because you need to print it out. You need to be able to write on it. And that's all about the strategy of your marketing followed by the tactics. Get the strategy right and then go into the tactics. So yeah, those are the first two.
And now this one you're working on now. So tell us, can you give us a sneak peek about what people can look forward to?
Absolutely. This one at the moment is imaginatively titled Standout Strategies. And it's a deep dive into the 5 strategies. It explains, first of all, an overview of why it's important to stand out in business. There are tools in the book on how to figure out which is your strategy. You can do a very basic test in the book. You can go to the website or you can phone me up and I'll talk to you about it. And then there's a chapter on each of the strategies looking at what do they look like? What do they sound like? How do they feel? How you can use them in your sales and marketing, how you can use them in customer service, what they don't look like. So there's a whole section on how to live certainty, for example, and how not to live certainty, how to get it wrong, like not answering the phone or not even putting the phone number up. So I've done that for each of the 5 strategies so that if you take the test and you go, right, significance, that's me all the way. You don't even have to read the first 4. You just go straight to significance and then you just follow all the practical tips and advice. Loads of advice there on putting it into practice and how to use it. And that book is coming out later in 2024. It's very nearly finished. I've got one more section to write and then it goes off to the typesetters and the proofreaders and printing and all of that lovely stuff.
I love it. So speaking of this, as you're just explaining the book and the concept, are there any 2 that are very conflicting of these 5? Like you said, you know, that growth and significance or significance in growth because they kind of bounce back and forth. Mm-hmm. Is there any other 2 that are like, no, you wouldn't want to use those 2 strategies together?
I don't think so. However, I've never seen contribution and growth together. That to me feels a little conflicting because if there was a company that was saying, we're going for growth, they may do it at the expense of the planet or their staff. Whereas companies that are really keen on contribution are looking at the bigger picture of how they treat their staff, reducing waste, paying it forward, all of that. So they may not be wanting to go, they may realize they can't go for as much growth because of it. So and I'm going to have to go and look at all the results that I've got and just have a look through and see if anyone has ever got contribution and growth. I don't think they have. So I think those would be the 2 that if that came up in a test as the 2 top ones, I'd question that. And I'd want to go back to the company and say, okay, let's talk about this a bit more. Let's get clarity on this.
This is so good. I can't wait to say goodbye to you and go take this test. And yet I'm so excited to talk more. Well, I'm in a struggle. Okay. Well, let's do this. Let's tell our listeners where they can find you.
Mm-hmm. My website is appletreeuk.com. And on that website, you'll find the Take the Test page. That you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I think I'm the only Chantal Cornelius in England with that spelling. But otherwise, go to my website and find all the details there.
I love it. Oh my gosh, this is so fun and so exciting. And it's been such a great conversation about marketing. So for our listeners, all of the links are going to be in the show notes here. So just click as you're listening and we'll get you to Chantal's website and I also will add the books. So I want to make sure we have them in there as well. So we'll have links to the books. And then of course, as soon as this new book comes out, we will be talking about that as well. So love it.
That'd be great.
Yes.
You have moved from fighting cancer to discovering how to live beyond it. But what now? With so many emotional side effects still unknown, as a new survivor, you find yourself in a void as you navigate through the isolation, fear, and an uncertain future that can overshadow you and your family for years to come. Instead of focusing on the uncertainty of cancer, consider how strong and determined you are, and think of the strength demonstrated by those who stood beside you through it all. Consider this. You now get to choose who you want to be, and what your intentional, fulfilled life can look like. You made it through treatment. We can help you define yourself as a survivor. We're here to help you through this moment, to walk beside you as you shift your mindset from counting the days of life to creating a legacy. For more information, visit www.adventuretherapyfoundation.org or contact us at info@adventurefound.org.
So, you know, on She's Invincible, we promise our listeners we're going to bring them fierce entrepreneurs and we're going to spotlight their expert zone of genius. Man, I just took you around the block. I did.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
You got your money's worth there.
I did. I know I did. And so I appreciate that so much because we want to give our listeners tangible things that they can do right now and see a difference right away, right? We don't want to wait forever. We want to see a change. And so thank you for that and being so, you know, open to sharing and contributing this today. But we're not done because we also promise them that while we are spotlighting these fierce entrepreneurs, that we're also going to pull back the curtain because women, especially women, are constantly comparing themselves. And every time they do, they come up short, right? They compare your strengths to their weaknesses. They can't win. And then they say things like, oh, she's so lucky. She's speaking on stages around the world and writing all these books and she's doing all this great marketing. You know, if I hear lucky one more time, I can't be responsible for how I may respond because it's not luck. We all have hard times. Entrepreneurship is not easy. Life is not easy. We are constantly overcoming and growing. And people don't see that because we talk about success. Yeah. So, and I love that because when we talk about success, we have more success.
Yeah.
But sometimes we need to pull back the curtain and say, hey, you think I'm lucky. You want what I have. Are you willing to pay the price I had to pay?
Yeah.
So are you ready to tell some fun stories or not so fun stories about that journey and the price that you paid for your success?
Let's do this. Let's do it, Tammy.
This is it. We're doing it. Okay. We're going to start with the good because that's my favorite thing. I always like to hear the good. Tell me a story about the good or the greatest part of your journey so far.
Okay, this may well sound very odd to a lot of people because the best thing that has happened to me in the last few years was my divorce. I had been married for, we were married for, I can't remember, it was 21, 22 years in the end, but we were separated for the last one. And looking back, it was quite an odd marriage. My husband worked away a lot and for the last 4 or 5 years, he would drive off on a Monday morning. He'd go off to work. He'd live in a flat that we bought for him and he'd come home on Thursday evening. And we might or might not spend some time together at the weekend. And my business was becoming more successful and he wasn't around and it seemed fine. And I think what kept us together was the fact that he was away a lot. And then COVID hit. March 2020, and he got sent home for lockdown and was back here at home and we were stuck together. And it just didn't work. And it all of a sudden, it highlighted all the things that all the reasons that we shouldn't have been staying together. You know, I had to completely flip my business. So I couldn't go out and speak. I couldn't go and have meetings with clients. Everything went online. I had to learn how to present online. I had to learn how to sort out lights and cameras and stands and all of this stuff. And he became, while I was dealing with all of this, I felt he became really closed in on himself. And I know he had his issues because all of a sudden he was having to work from home and he'd never done it before. But he had no concern for what I was going through. And he took over various bits of the house, which meant I couldn't go and work in, or I couldn't go and sit in various bits of the house where I wanted to, because he was there, he was working there all the time. And it just got to the point later that year when, so he came back in March, and by August, a friend of mine said, you need some professional counseling. You need to talk to a divorce lawyer. And I was like, I can't possibly have got that far. I did book a session with a counselor and a divorce lawyer who said, why on earth are you not divorced yet? And that took a lot of bravery. I was petrified the day I sat him down and said, we need to talk. But the good of that has really, it's completely changed my energy. It's changed the energy of my house. I got to keep the house, and he's gone off elsewhere. He's not that far away from me, actually. But it completely changed my, it really freed everything up. And I realized that for a long time, I'd been living under this rather dark cloud. I remember going out riding my horse one day, and I'm really lucky, she lives in a field next to my home. And I was out riding, and I got to the top of the lane, and I looked down the lane to what I normally think is the best view in the world. It's my house at the bottom of the lane. And I thought, I don't want to go home. And after he left, I ran around the house. I opened all the windows. I turned the music up full blast, and I romped around the house for quite a few days, and just cleared out all the negative energy. And it's just a complete shift. And people now say to me, oh, you look really happy. And I do. I feel happy. But it's really shifted my business as well. It's allowed my business to grow. You know, I would come up with a mad idea, and I'd go, I've got this great idea. And he'd go, really? What do you want to do that for? Whereas now I get a great idea and go, right, I'm doing it. I have an amazing new partner as well. And he says, yeah, great, let's do it. But it was letting go of the marriage that was actually holding me back, that one day I went, wow, it's all gone. I can move on.
Wow. That takes a lot of courage too, to say that, like, that's the good or the greatest thing, but it's the truth.
Yeah,
and people don't consider that as being a good or great thing, but
no.
You were transformed in the process, and freed, and that turned out to be great for you. And I'm sure it has for many other people who haven't told that story.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love that. And I'm happy you're happy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Now we have to shift. So we have to tell a story about the bad. We'll save the ugly for last.
Okay.
But
okay.
Tell us a story about the bad part of this journey.
Okay. The worst part of my journey was losing my darling mum 7 years ago. She hadn't been very well, but she gave me 4 days notice of dying, and that's just not enough. Mm-hmm. I was booked to go away on a residential course. And on the Saturday, I was due to go away on Sunday morning. And on Saturday, my dad phoned and said, your mum's not well. I think I need to get an ambulance, but don't worry, she'll be fine. So I sat and waited, and he got the ambulance, and she was taken into hospital. And I spoke to him on the Sunday, and he said she's got a lung infection and she's got fluid on her lungs, but they're going to give her antibiotics and she'll be fine. Go off and do your course. So I set off, went off, did the first day. And that evening I spoke to him. Yep, she's fine. Antibiotics are they're going to kick in soon. We're going to beat the bugs. She'll be absolutely fine. At 11 o'clock that night, my phone kept ringing, and I kept turning it off because I didn't recognize the number. And eventually I thought, I better answer it. And it was the hospital saying, we need to know whether or not we can resuscitate your mother because your father won't talk about it. At which point I said, firstly, don't resuscitate her. If she's too far gone, let her go. And secondly, I'm on my way. And I threw all of my luggage. I was staying at a kind of an Airbnb type place, and I threw everything into the car, jumped in the car, drove at lunatic speed via home to pick up my husband. I'd managed to wake him up, and we got to the hospital at 1 a.m. And mum was not in a good way. And the next day, well, at 8 o'clock that morning, I started phoning my siblings. My little sister Caroline lives in Singapore, and I phoned her and I said, mama's not doing very well. You might want to come home. And I said, but I think she might pull through it. And Caroline said, if I don't come, And she goes, I will never forgive myself. And bless her, she was there within 24 hours. She runs her own business. She dropped everything and got on a plane and flew over. All of the others arrived. And on the Monday afternoon in the hospital, we had a meeting with the doctor who said, your mum's got fluid on the lungs. She's got a lung infection. She's got kidney failure. She's got heart failure. And bless him, all my dad heard was she's got an infection. So he kept saying, oh, we're going to beat the bugs. She'll be okay. She'll be okay. And I looked around the rest of the room and we were all in tears, all going, she's never coming home. And Caroline got there the next day. We had time with mum. And then on the Wednesday, my dad went to see her in the morning and he phoned me because he did every day. And, oh, yeah, she's fine. She's sitting up. She's had some lunch. She's quite cheerful. I said, okay, great. Well, we're going to go and see her at 3 o'clock. And we got there at 3 o'clock and she was struggling to breathe to the point where they sedated her to kind of calm her down. And she died at 4 o'clock. And the fact that I was with her, I was so pleased I was with her because I was watching her struggling. And at one point I just said, Mama, you can sleep now. And she took her last breath and went. And I actually found it incredibly peaceful that in the end she could go that way. She was in a room on her own in the hospital. They turned all the machines off, all the noisy stuff. They'd drawn the curtains so that nobody could see in. And I was there with my husband and my sister. And we watched her go. The really tough bit was then gathering up her belongings and going down to my dad to say, she's died. And he nearly fainted. He just was not expecting it. I think his way of dealing with it was, no, she'll be fine. And all of a sudden I'm there saying, she's gone. And his world fell apart too. So that was, yeah. Whew. Mm.
And how old was she when she passed?
She was only 77.
Which is young.
Which is very young. And for a long time, I was really angry with my dad that he hadn't let me look after her because I'd seen for quite a few years that she was going downhill. And I was not angry with her, but I was like, why did you leave me? I was 46. You were 77. That's far too young to die. But what I've since realized is that she left so that I could move on with my life. I realized I woke up one day about 6 months after she died and I went, oh, hang on, life is too short. Go and do the stuff that you love doing. And the divorce didn't come till later, but it was, I love skiing and my husband didn't. And I have friends who I ski with. It's like, right, I'm going skiing. I'm going riding more. I'm going to do stuff with my business. And so mama leaving, while it was heartbreaking, I still miss her like crazy every day. She allowed me to move on. So it was bad, but tinged with good.
Yes, that's the theme here. And I love that. So I'm going to ask you this. What is your one most cherished memory or the thing you loved most about your mom?
All of it. She was incredibly strong-willed and strong, a bit like me. She was invincible, but she was also incredibly kind. When you asked me that question, the first memory that popped into my head was me sitting on the kitchen floor, aged about 3. I don't know if it's still on, there used to be a radio program in England called Listen with Mother. And I used to listen to it with her every day. And I see her cooking at the stove. She was a fabulous cook. And back then, my dad was still sort of around and there was no money. And I can't remember what she was cooking. And I was playing with a toy rabbit on the floor. And I just kind of have this vision of her looking down at this grubby little urchin of a 3-year-old playing with a rabbit on the floor. And just the amazing love that she had for everyone, anyone and everyone, whether it had fur or feathers or legs or was a child, she just had this amazing compassion. She would help anyone do anything, but at the same time was incredibly strong. We didn't do sympathy as kids. There was no sympathy. Even if I did throw myself to the floor and cry in front of her, she was like, come on, get up, you're fine. Just amazing. She made me who I am today. Thanks, Mum.
Well, and I was gonna say, it sounds like you inherited a lot of her great qualities. Just from what I know about you. So, and I love that. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, that was great. Okay. Now we have to talk about ugly.
Yeah.
I know. Tell us a story about the ugly part of the journey.
The ugly part of the journey. This is something that I still get right now. And I've been in business for all this time and I'm 53 and it still gets me. I have an annoying habit of overreacting and getting too emotional about something, stuff. One of my strongest values is respect. And I think that when I feel that that value has been violated or when somebody is disrespecting me, I react really strongly. So I might get a message from somebody saying, oh, we've decided to do such and such and we didn't think you needed to know. And I look at it and go, ah, that's just infuriating. And if I don't stop and take a deep breath or go for a walk outside, I will respond. I do it too often with things like WhatsApp or Facebook or emails, because I get the message through and I'm like, right, I want to type it as quickly as possible, fling off a response. And I'm learning the hard way to look at it and go, okay, maybe that's just somebody else's opinion, yet they haven't asked me. I feel disrespected. They should have asked me. I'll get them back later. But I don't need to respond now. I need to process this. Because when I do respond straight away, my emotions, my negative emotions go through the roof. I get stressed. I get angry. I snap at my darling partner. I shout at the dog. I make the bad mistakes with other clients. So I am becoming much more aware of the ugly side of me, which is the, you know, the short temper, the short fuse. And just going, okay, it's annoyed me. Let's review. Let's step back. Deep breath, fresh air. And then respond. So yeah, that's the ugly.
I love that. I love that. You and I are very similar in that way. And I love what you said about I'll get them back later.
Oh, yes. Oh, I will. Oh, I so
oh,
will.
You will. You can oh, count yes. on it. Yeah.
I will sneak up on them. I will wait 6 months. No,
that's not sneak attack. Oh yeah. My gosh. You know, I do that too. I'm getting better, but I wonder what triggers that. Like, because I have that value too of respect. Mm. And I'll tell you, as soon as I feel disrespected, I lose my stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's not pretty. And I wonder, I often wonder, what is that? What is some childhood trauma or something that happened that that triggers that now?
Probably. I think it's also one of my other top values is support. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of time supporting other people and I like to be supported. So if somebody disrespects me and shows a lack of support, that's a double whammy, and then they are in serious trouble. That's me firebombing their house in 6 months time. But I think when those two are violated, that's when my blood boils. If it's just one or the other, it's bad, but it's when it's two, it's like, yeah, that's
so bad. Weird that you say that, because I am always reminding myself, they're not like you. Don't expect them to be like, right? Yeah. Like I walk around so saying good. That because I'm so disappointed because I'm always give. And then I don't do it to get anything back, but I also expect like the law of reciprocity to show up, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, like have my back. And when that happens, I have to constantly say, they are not like you. They're not you.
That is such good advice, Kathy. Yeah,
they're never going to do what you do. They can't. They're not capable. Right. You're better than that.
And they probably don't even realize
they
the
don't.
Effects they're having because of what they've said. And I have to just go, that's just who you are. Fine. Move on, Chantal.
Yes. They have different values too, right? And they're not aligned. But yet we're expecting them to do like we do. Mm. And it doesn't work that way. Yep. But I've seen it. Oh my gosh. This has been amazing. It's a little scary since we have a lot in common.
Yes.
But what a great conversation. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your authenticity. Thank you for being invincible and sharing so much of your heart and your soul and your brain today. You gave it all.
I did. That's what I do.
I know. And now it's the end of your day. So I want to say thank you so much. And I want to say to our listeners, I don't know where you are in your life or your business, but if you're face down on the ground right now, get back up. Mm-hmm. Tell them, Chantal.
Yeah, get up. Don't worry about whether or not your mum or anybody else is watching. Just get back up and do your own invincible. Because actually, when you get back up on your own, you realize the power that you have and the strength and the invincibility that you have. So yeah, get up.
Isn't that true? Just get up, you guys. I know it's hard. I know it's hard. It was hard for us too.
Yeah.
But you can do it. You can do anything. You are invincible.
Thank you for joining us today. If you were inspired or learned something new, please follow the show, submit a rating and review, and share us with your friends. If you would like to chat to see if you can attract your ideal client and monetize your business through podcasting, please book a free call with me at CammieLehman.com. I can't wait to meet you.